2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.
Now, from the early 70s to now, humans haven't been visiting the moon that much, but that is all about to change. Here to explain what's coming up for the moon and more is scientist Niamh Shaw. Good morning.
Good morning, Laura.
Sounds very strange because I instinctively, without even thinking about it, go, our favourite scientist, Dr. Niamh Shaw. It's just like your entire title.
Well, I like it. I'll take it. I love it.
Good. Let's do it. We love it as well. Let's start with something that is happening right now, because the International Space Station.
Yeah.
Why are Crew 11 returning to Earth earlier than expected, and why is that significant?
It is the first time they've evacuated a crew in 25 years of the International Space Station been fully crewed, which means people on board.
Yeah.
Every single crew that goes up has planned for a potential evacuation, and this is the first time it's ever happened. It happens if somebody needs to get down quickly. So what happened was last Wednesday, one of the crew had a medical issue.
Okay.
And they have trained in dentistry, basic procedures like stitching, giving people injections and IV and everything. So in order for them, for the fact that they decided that they couldn't do it on site on the International Space Station, they made the decision the following day that they needed to bring this person home.
Okay. And we've no more information as to what that is.
You know, in the same way your GP wouldn't, you know what I mean? He wouldn't be like telling
we're
people
just being nosy.
While shopping. Yeah, we're just nosy. You'll never find out,
because
I don't know what your medical history is like, so no doctor will ever share that. But so they're coming down tomorrow.
Okay.
You know, they're getting the 46A home. I know. It's kind of like that, isn't it? They're coming home tomorrow. They're going to be on flight EI-795. So they go up in their capsule, and they always go home in the same capsule.
Okay.
So it was a SpaceX Crew Dragon that they went up, and it's a crew of four.
Okay.
And so they're undocking tomorrow, and then they'll be down. So they're actually finishing their mission a month early, which is very unprecedented. It's never happened before.
Well, I'm sure as well, absolutely none of them want to finish their mission early.
No.
You know, and even the person who has got this issue that is bringing them back down to Earth.
He was so bad. He goes, I'm so sorry, lads. You're going, not for God's sake.
Yeah, it's grand. It's grand. Don't worry about it. But what's this mean now? Because that's crew 11. So is there like a crew 12
always,
that are ready and waiting to go?
Yeah, there's always like the next crew lining up, you know. And the next one's interesting because we have a European astronaut on board.
Yeah.
And this is her first mission. She came from the new recruits of 2024, Sophie Adeno. So that's crew 12.
Okay.
So they were initially due to go in February 15th. Now, I got a message there this morning that I think they're still sticking to that. So there'll be a couple of weeks where there's only three on board the International Space Station.
Okay.
But I mean, that's like up until a few years ago, that was quite normal. Like this time last year, we had the opposite problem. We had the
couldn't
two astronauts
down.
That couldn't get home.
Yeah.
Because their spacecraft, the Starliner, had
oh my God,
had
we
flaws
were following
in it.
That to within an inch of its life.
Yeah,
we
and they came
it.
Down mid-February. So they ended up, they were going for 8 days and they ended up staying 9 months.
Yes.
Yeah, Butch Wilmore and Sunita Williams. So like overcrowding is probably worse. Like they had nowhere to sleep. So they used to kind of sleep in their spacecraft and things. So it just puts more pressure on the people left because there's experiments happening. Like the International Space Station is like a living laboratory, really.
Okay.
And so there are all these racks of experiments that have been planned and scheduled for years. And so somebody has to go around, take the readings, do this. There's a very tight schedule. So those four crew of crew 11 would have been given specific tasks to do. So the last month of that, they have to make big decisions around that. And the NASA astronaut and the two Russian astronauts that are left, they were on a separate mission.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that they can take on board. The crew 11 is one Russian astronaut, a Japanese astronaut, and two NASA astronauts. So how they share that workout, I don't know. Then you've got maintenance all the time. Mm. So there's a lot going on. So
what it's like in any job, if you all of a sudden lost four people,
it's
a huge impact to the workload.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's only so long that you can keep that going for. Let's talk about all this going back to the moon, because it's a flyby, not a landing. Is this really going to happen again? And why now? And why has it not happened in so long? Actually, before we even get into that, let's have a little listen to the first moon landing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. At the foot of the ladder, the landing AM footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches. I'm going to step off the land now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
I goosebumps.
Always think about that though, because, you know, did Neil Armstrong ever think that this was going to be like regurgitated out for years and years and years and years and years? You know, like, you have to really think about the words that you're going to say that the world is going to hear at some point. Mm. Like, we haven't really been visiting the moon much since the 70s. So why is there so much focus on it again, Niamh?
Well, you know, we're explorers. Humans are curious. We're nosy. We're explorers. And the thing about when you put missions in extreme environments, you come up with solutions, and those solutions always help benefit Earth. And that's why I'm really invested in it. So we have MRI scans, we have sunglasses. There's so many things that have happened as a consequence of bringing people to the moon the first time, but also having this science lab orbiting Earth. Like, there's businesses now that are growing proteins in microgravity and everything, because they grow more uniformly and everything. So there's that. But there's also, you know, sometimes it happens because it's there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time it happens for politics, geopolitics, which is unfortunate. But I think this time it happened because we have so many questions about Mars that we can't really answer without there being a physical presence there and a laboratory there or a research station there. And Mars is just too far away to just like hop on the 46A and off you go. It takes between 39. If it ever comes, it ever comes. So, you know, it takes between 7 months and 2 years to get to Mars, depending on where Earth is in its orbit around the sun. And so that's just too dangerous. So like what happened with Crew 11, something happens within a matter of days, we can bring them down. When they undock, they're home in a matter of hours. If something happens on Mars, they're stuck there for 2 years minimum. So the thing about space agencies is that it's as important to bring people home as it is to get people there. So it's really, really, really difficult when you leave the planet Earth to survive. There's no oxygen, your gravity's gone, there's no stores, there's no like Centra, Tesco, Super Value, there's nothing. So you have to create that infrastructure from the start. The best way to think of it is when we had our European explorers, you know, discover, I'm putting that in quotes, America, like Christopher Columbus, and then people from Europe started kind of growing and developing their own ecosystem. They had to chop down trees, they had to build houses, but there was oxygen, there was trees, you know, there were animals. You go to the Mars, there's nothing. So in order to do it, in order to get the answers about what happened Mars for it to become this desert, could that happen to Earth, you need to lay down the infrastructure. So the moon is only 2 days away. Okay. So if something goes wrong, we can get them home.
I think as well, because obviously we had, you know, the first landing on the moon in the 70s, and we've been talking about it so much. And there's been so much talk about, like, you know, space stations and like space laboratories and all that. Yeah. We nearly normalize it as if this is the most normal thing.
So dangerous.
Just hop up to the moon. Anyone who puts themselves in that position it's mind blowing.
It's so dangerous. It is so. I don't think anybody really understands moment to moment life here. Like, if you read any of the memoirs of people who've done it, like Scott Kelly's, I love because he's really moany and he was complaining like the oxygen. I love it though because he makes it so real. He just pulls it back. The oxygen machine on the International Space Station has a tendency to malfunction.
That's
so
not what
you need. It pulls carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. There's a chemical reactor and then oxygen comes out. And he'd say you kind of start feeling punchy and you go, oh, the oxygen machine doesn't work. The oxygen machine doesn't work. You know, we're here. I can take as much oxygen as I want in this room. So it's incredibly dangerous. And then going to the moon is even more dangerous. You're physically going on something that's moving as Earth is moving.
Yeah.
And not just that, just the engineering. Like, I've seen enough launches now, and even the ones that go to the International Space Station, they're so powerful. But the one that goes to the moon shatters windows. It's like incredibly powerful. It takes years to just assemble the rocket alone. When I went to the first return to the moon mission, Artemis 1, in 2024, I went to the first two attempts, and they and they couldn't get it. They couldn't get it working. So they it took 2 months later. Everything is extremely different.
And just as well, like for a reminder for people as well who mightn't be au fait with all of your astronaut activities, Dr. Yeah. Nushaw, that you do in your spare time, you have experienced this. You've gone to to live like an astronaut.
That's
You've
right.
been at the
Utah on a Mars, simulated Mars. I was still on Earth. I was going around with a fake spacesuit. It was a bin. It was basically a bin with a Perspex front on my head. You know those swing bins with the round bits? That's what they did. They welded a bit of plastic onto it. I was wearing a bin lid on my head and I was terrified. You know, like you take away day-to-day infrastructure, everything gets really difficult.
Yeah.
But the thing about the moon is everybody looks up at the moon and they all have some sort of connection to it.
Yeah.
So the evening that Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin stood on the moon, the whole world was watching. So it has this unifying moment. And the most important thing about space for me is it's that perspective that we tend to think we are the most important thing on this planet. We're not. We're one of thousands of different creatures. The creatures get it, but we've kind of forgotten it. And it gives us an arrogance and it's a blind spot that a lot of people feel when we do things that allow us to see the Earth from a distance. We realise how lucky we are to have this planet.
I mean, but
that's the important
it's
thing.
Humans through and through. We just have main character syndrome of all
Absolutely.
Times in our own beings.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this moon mission that is happening right now, because there's a couple of very interesting firsts that are going to be taking place.
Yes. So so there's a window. There's a few days in February, a few days in March, a few days in April where the launch can happen, and we have to do that because it is so incredibly difficult to launch. There are four people going to be on the top of the rocket, so it's crewed. The first woman ever, Christina Koch, will be there. The first person of colour, the first Canadian, and then a white man from NASA. But you know, it's really important that we see that. So this is also the second test for us to eventually land people on the moon. All expeditions require people to go ahead and test and test and test. And this is another test. It'll be a 10-day mission, and they'll orbit the moon in that time. Incredible feat of achievement, but also lots of firsts there, which is really important.
Is this mission called Artemis 2?
So Artemis is the sister of Apollo. Yeah. The previous missions were Apollo. And yeah, at the time, you know, women could just as easily have been part of those missions, but the world wasn't ready for that yet. But we're ready now. And that's
here
important.
We are. And we are grabbing the bull by the horns and going with it. Were you going to be there at the launch?
Yes. So
excellent.
So I'll be there. I'll be there. You know, I may have to go back a couple of times to make sure I'm there. But
of course.
I will be there and I'll be streaming live and everything so people can join in.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we will definitely be giving updates here of how you're getting on.
Because
it is huge. It's so exciting. Moving on to the big solar eclipse in 2026.
Yeah.
When and where will it be?
Well, Ireland will experience it.
Woo!
Yeah. So what an eclipse is, just so you know. So what an eclipse is, you know, as you know, the moon and the Earth go around the sun, and sometimes crazy things happen that things line up. So sometimes the moon gets in the way of the line of the sun hitting the Earth.
Okay.
Not all of Earth, just parts of Earth. So there's a shadow that lands on Earth because the moon just lines up perfectly with the sun to obscure it. And that's called a total solar eclipse. And so there's parts of the world that are in darkness for a couple of minutes during those minutes where the moon completely obscures the light of the sun. Now, then around that, you have places that get 90% of that, 80, 60, whatever. And so they'll get a sensation of some of that, and Ireland will be one of it. Like 93% to 96% of totality will happen on in Ireland. It's happening on the 12th of August. But across Spain, it gets that full shadow. So I'll be in Spain.
Okay.
On that day, hopefully this will be my second total solar eclipse.
That
they are mental.
So exciting. Also, every time you say total eclipse, all I can think of
total
is
eclipse.
No, actually, not where I was going with it.
Bonnie
I was going to say the Jaffa Cakes ad.
Okay. Yeah, total eclipse, half moon,
total eclipse.
Total eclipse.
That's when marketing was at its peak. The fact that you could catch that many people, and 20 years later, I'm still talking about it. Why are eclipses still so scientifically interesting to you, though?
Because the sun is alive. It's very active, and it goes through phases of more activity than others. So did you see the auroras like 2 years ago?
Yes.
So that happened because the sun is quite active. So it's spewing out loads of what they're called coronal mass ejections. And it's like weather. So like this like a solar wind comes and it interferes with our magnetic north and south pole, and it kind of ionizes the air and and oxygen particles and hydrogen particles interact, and they give off these kind of curtains of light.
Yeah.
That only happens when the sun is really active, because normally people pay huge bucks to see it, you know, up by Iceland in winter and south. But it came all the way down to Ireland because we had one of these kind of solar weather events. So when you have an eclipse, when it's in totality, you can see that ring around the sun. And when I saw it 2 years ago, you could actually see how active the sun is.
It's
and this year, the sun is at its maximum activity. So there'll be lots of people who are studying solar physics, which is our heliophysics, which is the you know, the study of the sun, who will be lining up all their equipment for those 4 or 5 minutes of totality.
I know, it's so exciting. Let's talk about Vegas for a second.
Yeah,
let's bring it to Viva Las Vegas. Because Consumer Electronics Show took place there last week. This is where we can glean a few things about what our future is going to look like. So what interesting things did you spot?
Well, there's always mental stuff. Like they always kind of come out with amazing TV screens and stuff, but they always take a long time to get to us. But some of the really interesting things was this ultrasonic knife. So rather than, you know, we've always like sharpened our knives, like since we've had tools, we've used knives that have a sharp blade.
Yeah.
No, they've come up with one that uses ultrasound to cut. So you're
what?
So there's no actual knife. Yeah, you're just using the vibrations, ultrasonic vibrations, to cut your meat. You know, on a Sunday, I'll do the carving. It's not like, you know, the way you have those, you know, those electronic ones. Like,
oh my God, sorry, the one that comes out at Christmas that sends the dog scatty because it's going.
That's right.
In the kitchen, it's like, yeah, is there a cracker going? That's will right. I pour another glass of wine?
Yeah, and the Brussels sprouts. So you won't ever hear that noise again. It'll be ultrasound. So it literally like cuts through things like butter, and so you don't force it. You literally just hold it and goes, can't wait to get that.
Can it tell the difference if it's that smart? Like, how would you not cut yourself? Like,
yeah, I don't know. You'd have to be careful as well,
yeah,
I guess.
You don't chop
but like
off
at least like when you have it in the drawer, you don't accidentally hurt yourself. You know what I mean? It's like when it's off, it's just like a rod. Isn't it amazing?
That is bizarre. What
bizarre.
Else?
There's a mattress, an AI mattress that basically...
I don't know if I want to get in bed with a robot.
Yeah, but no. The mattress itself measures your position, measures your body temperature, measures when you fall asleep or not. It adjusts the mattress to your shape and to your temperature.
Sign me up for the temperature.
And checks your sleep, tells you when you slept and when you didn't, and it adjusts it accordingly.
I want everything bar the data on when I did and didn't sleep, because I just think that that's such a waste of time to look at, because I'll arrive and if it's like, oh my God, you only slept 4 hours, I'm like, I only slept 4 hours.
Yeah.
But I could also wake up and go, I slept
really
4 hours.
Exactly.
But I want the temperature end of that. I think that sounds
There's an exoskeleton. It's a really good idea. So for people who are like long distance runners and stuff, you can kind of cheat now. It's this external skeleton you can put to your body, and it actually makes your hips move.
Oh.
So it's kind of like a hybrid, one of those kind of mopeds. But also for older people, it means that they can walk longer, they can stand up longer.
Yeah.
And if you're somebody whose job is quite physical, the exoskeleton can actually help you with that as well.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and lots of AI. There's always loads
of AI.
And Lego. Lego have a new interactive brick.
I've heard about this.
Yeah.
I saw it I saw it on TikTok the other day.
Yeah,
and Two of Them Breakfast were talking about it an awful lot as well.
I know
this about everything. I don't know what the appeal is for it, because it seems very limited in what it's actually offering. And for it to be the first big change that Lego have made in its lifetime, it just feels a little bit like, meh.
Yeah, I do too. And I also feel like there's something about Lego that it's about your own imagination.
Yeah.
One other thing, hair clippers that you just put in what hairstyle you want and it'll cut it that way.
There we go.
Isn't that brilliant?
That's what we want.
Yeah.
My hairdresser is going to be screaming at me right now.
Being
like,
do
not want me
jobs.
Out of a job. Come on, Steph. Or I could be like, oh, have at it, because I can't be dealing with you anymore. Niamh Shaw, as always, thank you so much for coming in with us. We would absolutely and utterly love to catch up with you while you're at the moon launch.
Yep.
Any chance, I know you'll be live streaming, that we could get you on a phone?
Of course.
Excellent.
Of course. No problem at all. No problem. I mean, that's part of the job. I'm there as
good. There she goes. It's part of the job,
lads. Part of the job.
Representing the Laura Fox Show. Niamh, thank you so much.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.